Well, 1917 was a year of all the arrests.
And 1918, wasn't it?
1917, and it started.
But didn't it continue through 1918?
It continued through 1918.
It began, I remember, when we went into war in 1917.
Just before you went into the war.
Yes.
Yeah. And,
you remember who the chief of police was there?
Oh, yes, there. I took his name down.
Was it Sylvester?
Who?
Sylvester.
Yes, he was the first one, and then there was a major. A major something or other later on that year. Sylvester was the first.
You know, I was telling you before that when I thought back, was who's chief of police, but only think of Major Sylvester. And I wondered if he had, you know, in as early as our first procession, I didn't know whether he was the same one or not.
I don't know when, about 1914, but in 1917 he was in charge. And, there were a few things going on in the background. I wonder if we could cover them before we get to the picketing and the arrests, which might or might not have influenced the movement. I wondered if you were able to at all profit from the $1 million that was willed for our suffrage propaganda to Carrie Chapman Catt by Mrs. Frank Leslie.
No, it was...
Was any of that helpful?
No, we never had one single dollar, of course.
I knew you didn't have any money from it, but I thought maybe from their propaganda campaign.
No, because the propaganda campaign was against what we were doing. You see, Mrs. Catt used it to establish a magazine, and that magazine replaced the Old Woman's Journal, which had been supporting us. And this new one didn't support us at all.
Oh, really?
You know, Mr. Frank...
Yeah, I noticed that a magazine was established.
That's the main thing that they put their money into, as far as I know.
Yeah.
And, let me see, what's this man's name? It's Frank Stevens. I don't really know who he is. But he's the president of our Men's League for Illegal Rights Amendment. And he was not the president, but was a member of the Men's League for Women's Suffrage in the suffrage phase. And when he was a young boy and just graduated from Dartmouth, he went up, he told me this, and I know him quite well, he went up to Boston to find some work after he graduated from college. And by chance, he was got a position in the circulation department, the business end of the Women's Journal. You know what the Women's Journal was through all those years. And so he told me so much about how they sympathized with us and helped us, and I knew they had. And I'd gone up to see Alice Stone Blackburn, who was the editor, daughter of Lucy Stone. So then he told me how they finally gave up their paper when Mrs. Catt got this enormous bequest, which enabled her to start one on a bigger, far bigger scale than theirs. So the Women's Journal was given up, was replaced by this one, Mrs. Catt. And of course, as I told you, how hostile Mrs. Catt was to us. I think I did tell you that. I don't know if I did tell you that. What's that prison name out of Wisconsin? A woman writer.
In Wisconsin?
Yeah. She was a very well-known woman writer. Well, I thought you just might know I was a writer, but I'll go and tell you about her and I'll think about her name.
Okay. I'm just going to look up this.
But all events, this young woman out there, and I guess she was young, maybe about 30 or 40. Anyway, she was a very prominent woman in the United States in the field of authorship. And so... She was a member of our organization in Wisconsin, also a member of the Old National American, as nearly everybody was of that type. And then, so she conceived the idea that she would unite us. Have I told you?
No.
And so she called me up and said, I'm going to arrange a meeting at the Willard. And will you come and bring anybody you want to bring to it? To meet with Mrs. Catt, whom I'm going to ask and insist that she come, as I'm a member of her organization. And we stop this this constant friction between these two groups, which is so bad for the women movement, so bad for our ever getting the vote. And so I said, yes, of course we will. And Lucy Burns, I went, and I went, and we took one secretary to take down everything. I think that's all we took. And then Mrs. Taft came.
Now, may I ask you a question? Was this the meeting with Maudwood Park?
Oh, was it?
No, okay.
You'll know this woman, I'm sure. But I remember... I just can't remember what
it was. I got to think about
it. Mm-hmm. I haven't thought of it since all these years and years. Mm-hmm. And I, well, at all events, Mrs. Pat arrived with some people on her side. And then I took Mrs. wherever she was. Then now she had brought us together, thinking that we could solve whatever difficulty we had and so on. And she told what she thought we ought to do. And I said, we said, for our group, I knew we'd do every one of these things. We'd glad to. So we really want to have this continued fiction. And then she turned to Mrs. Taft. And Mrs. Taft said, I want to say that I will fight you to the last ditch. And that's the last word she ever said that I always heard from her in my life. Mm-hmm. And she got up and walked out with her little group. So her paper was used to that same word.
And that was after the Women's Journal changed to a thing called the Suffrage News.
Was it?
That was the name of this new paper or magazine that was put out
know.
With the $1
million. I don't
know what
it was called, but it was a loss to us when we lost the Women's Journal. And it, huh? And it, when you just asked me that question, did we profit by this bequest? Well, we certainly didn't.
Yeah. Rose Young.
And then Mrs. Kapp used this money always. And I suppose she was very conscientious, thought she was doing the right thing. But when suffrage was won, I went over just sort of to rest and so on, I guess, and was invited by Mrs. Belmont, anyway, to come over and stay with her a little while. And I went over and stayed in England and met the president of the National American, well, what's it called? International Suffrage Alliance. That's the international to which the National American was affiliated.
Oh.
And her name was Mrs. Corbett Ashby. And I went out, I telephoned to her, made an appointment, went out to see her, and she invited me out to lunch at her home. And I remember she said to me, now we would like very much to have the Women's Party join us because we have the National American Women's Suffrage Association, and we'd also like to have the Women's Party affiliate with the international, she was the international president. And I said, yes, of course, we'd like to. Naturally, we'd like to affiliate. Now we were through with our own campaign for getting the vote. We'd like to affiliate, as I feel now, we'd like to affiliate with the women who are doing it internationally, which really had been started in largely by Susan B. Anthony. It's international movement, which Mrs. Corbett Ashby then inherited. And so she said, I'm going to write you a formal invitation to affiliate with us. And I said, all right, and we will accept it, I know, because I know without even not asking that all of our people would be in favor of doing this. And Mrs. Belmont, by that time, had become very fervent in her work with us, and she had moved over to live permanently in France to be with her daughter, Madame Balzac, as you know. Madame Balzac, who had been the Duchess of Marlborough. So they were both living in France. So we accepted, and when Mrs. Belmont knew we were coming, she said she wanted to make quite a large gift to the international. Of course, she was primarily interested, perhaps, in the international. And she said she would entertain the international and do all the things that she could do. And would also make a financial gift to them. So we chose a group of people to go over, most of whom paid their own expenses, but we put in a few people who couldn't pay their own expenses. And it was a very great very vivid, and I thought a good delegation, maybe 20 people or 30 people perhaps. And for instance, Elsa Hillworm, and she spoke French and had been teaching French.
Oh, yes.
And Mabel Vernon went,
mm-hmm.
and Doris Stevens went. All of us, it was a good group. And before they left, we received word from Mrs. Astry that they wished to withdraw their invitation to us because Mrs. Katz, who had been the international president before Mrs. Astry, had felt that we were not a desirable group to have in the international, and had said that she would give no more money to the international from her Leslie fund if they allowed us to become members. So I wrote back to Mrs. Astry and said, and I think you'll find all this in the second discovery, or in the, it ought to be in the second discovery, right at the end of the second campaign. And I said, well, we have had the invitation, we've made the plans, the people were all ready and prepared to go, and probably whatever differences it might be, it could be ironed out at the convention. If there was anything in our program was not in harmony with their program, they could settle it maybe at the convention itself. And all the people who went on the delegation were in accord with that. They all thought, Mr. Belmont was in accord, they all thought, we don't want to be suddenly told by Mrs. Tatler, we can go and we can't go to an international convention when we've been asked by the international president.
Mm-hmm.
And when we certainly had wanted to vote in our country, and we had not, shouldn't be put in this position. So they went. And Lady Rhonda went over, whom we'd gotten to know very well, from England.
Lady who?
Lady Rhonda, R-H-O-N-D-A, you've heard of her, I think. She was the head of what was called Six Point Group. A group which belonged to the international and was very up and coming and forward group in England. So when they got there, Lady Rhonda was so incensed at what was going on that she rose and withdrew all her delegates and would have nothing further to do with the convention. I don't know what stage of the proceeding she did this, but she did withdraw, I guess, from the whole organization, as far as I know. But we had asked Mabel Vernon to make the main speech for us, because of all the people who were there, we thought she was our best speaker. And she was, in my opinion, without any question, our best speaker. And people have often said, it's pity Mabel Vernon didn't die after that speech, because she would have... It was the most wonderful speech that could ever have been made by a human being. They thought everybody said this to me, whoever made any report about the convention. And they said this was a high point of her life. It was such an amazing speech. Well, when the point came up of whether we should be seated or not seated, that was what it was, whether the American delegation, she made the speech. And I think it was after that speech that maybe it was Lady Rhonda said, well, now if you don't seat them, I withdraw. So, of course, she was a powerful person, too. But the whole thing was that the only thing that came up was, well, they couldn't afford to lose the Leslie money.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and that wasn't God put in the speeches, but that's what the whole thing was more or less about. And Mrs. Katz was making... And they said, was insisting upon this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Mrs. Katz was there. I'm sure she wasn't. And Mrs. Belmont was like Lady Rhonda. She was aroused to such a point. Oh, my goodness. And so she said that she canceled all her promises to give the international all this money, which would have been a great deal if she'd continue. And she was going to give it to the local suffrage organizations in France, which she did.
Oh.
Which more or less put them on their feet. But not, they were not connected, I guess in any way, with the international. So we were voted down. But we were voted down I think that the point on which we were voted down was that we couldn't, of course they didn't say the money part, but I knew from my letter from Lady Rondo, I mean Mrs. Ashby, what the point was. What they said was, if I remember rightly, maybe we'll remember Grado better than I am sure this whole meeting, because he led the fight there. But what they said was, if I remember rightly, that they couldn't have and two organizations from the same country that had different policies, and that we had the policy of complete equality, and they had the policy of protection of women. And that, and I remember somebody later from Holland who came over to our country, and she said, you know, I think that the death, really, of the international took place at that meeting, because after all, most of us do stand for complete equality. And I thought they did when I went over and I became a member of the International Committee on Law, I think they called it, of the International Council of Women. I discovered it was true that those women over there, they were all pioneer women, you see, they were in the women movement in Europe. Not the great mass of college, you say college women, and so on, that are flooding the marketplaces now, and they don't have any particular pioneer spirit. Well, they were still in that pioneer stage over there when I went over, you know, later, and I don't know that I ever met a person who wanted protection. So this was it was something that could have been solved at that convention. They certainly were not obliged to put people out because they stood for complete equality. And the people who said, oh no, all these poor working girls and women who worked at night and all that, you know?
What was the name of CAP's organization at this time?
In international?
No, nationally. Was it still the NAWSA?
Well, it was not her organization, particularly she belonged to it and was a leader in it. Huh? They never changed their name until suffrage was won, you know.
I thought this was after our suffrage was won.
Yes, but it was almost immediately.
Oh.
I didn't,
okay.
I wouldn't know about that point.
It's just a point to
I don't know what day they changed their name.
Look it up. And the other thing I was wondering, Alice, do you happen to know where the papers are the proceedings of this meeting? Because it'd be nice to have a copy of Mabel Vernon's speech.
Certainly would. I don't doubt that they kept such good records as that.
Yeah. You don't know that there are any proceedings. So if they are, they might be where, in England?
I have the faintest idea who's the international president now. See, we never became members of them. We became members when they refused to take us. We were invited by the International Council of Women, which was the one which was founded in 1888 in Washington by Susan B. Anthony and all our women, you know, Frances Willard, all those people.
Yes.
And you know about that, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Well, they invited us to become members, and we accepted, so we've always belonged to that group.
Well.
But they have an organization, I'm sure, and a headquarters somewhere in the world, the International Suffrage Alliance. But now let's get back to your question.
All right, back to the United States. That was a very marvelous answer to that question about the $1 million from Mrs. Frank Leslie. Along with this also...
I wouldn't put it ever in your record, you know. I don't like to have attacks on anybody going down in history.
Yeah, okay. Well, you'll get this back, and if you'd like for the typist to leave that out.
Well, you can just judge yourself. I mean, I don't want this to be something that's going to be a source of friction and so on down through the ages.
Yeah. I wouldn't either. It looks like that its time should have run out by now as a source of friction. There were also food riots. 5,000 women in New York were demanding government action to bring down the cost of food.
Were they?
Yeah. Now, did this displeasure on the part of women and their frustration at not being in not being a part of the political establishment for such actions as this. Was this useful to you? Do you remember?
Well, do you remember reading that, whether that's the one that Mrs. Belmont participated in?
Let me see. No. It's just a little item here on page 4 of the March 3rd suffrages, 1917. The mass meeting was the culmination of rioting in many sections of the city.
Well, what was the mass meeting?
Demonstration. It was this 5,000 women who met in and outside of Farwood Hall in Lower New York City last week. And they passed a resolution to the president demanding government action to bring down the high cost of food. And it refers to vigorous action of women in New York and Philadelphia and other eastern cities.
I know that there was a period there where people were opening all kinds of soup kitchens and so on. And Mrs. Belmont was one of the people who did it. And all the people of a philanthropic nature who were sort of expected to do these things were doing them. And but it didn't come. We didn't cross our path one way or the other.
I think I
wouldn't have known it, but excepting for having known that Mrs. Belmont was doing it all the time.
This may be something different, because in this, President Wilson backed an appropriation of $400,000 to inquire into the food situation.
Yes. I just remember this was going on.
Okay.
Women were, not only women, everybody was having...
Okay.
It was one of those economic crises, but they came and they went, you know, all the time.